Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the June 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin with RF Current, news from the world of communications by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR. MFJ Enterprises closes. On April 25th, MFJ Enterprises announced it would close its facilities in Starkville, Mississippi, May 17th, after 52 years of operations. MFJ halted all production of its iconic brand name amateur radio equipment, including Ameritron, High Gain, Cushcraft, Mirage, and Vectronix brands. It was announced that existing stock would be sold while available, and the company's repair services would be offered for the foreseeable future. Martin F. Jew, K5FLU, who founded MFJ Enterprises in 1972, said in a widely distributed statement, "Times have changed since I started this business 52 years ago. Our product line grew and grew and prospered. COVID changed everything in businesses, including ours. It was the hardest hit that we have ever had, and we never fully recovered. I turned 80 this year. I had never really considered retirement, but life is so short and my time with my family is so precious. I want to thank all of our employees who have helped build this company with me over the years. We have many employees who have made MFJ their career for 10, 20, 30, 40, or more years." He added, "A special thanks to all of our customers and our dealers who have made MFJ a worldwide name and a profitable business for so many years. You are all so much appreciated." Saga of NASA's lost satellites. Many media sources were intrigued recently by the apparent recovery of a lost satellite known as Infrared Calibration Balloon S-73-7. The satellite was launched in 1974 as part of the U.S. Air Force's Space Test Program, which was begun in 1967. The purpose of S-73-7, basically a 26-inch wide inflatable, was to serve as a calibration target for remote sensing equipment. But the infrared calibration balloon is not NASA's only lost and found satellite. May 9, 2018, an amateur astronomer rediscovered Imager for Magnetopause to Aurora Global Exploration, IMAGE, launched March 25, 2000, into a highly elliptical polar orbit. The satellite was unexpectedly lost on December 18, 2005, likely due to a power subsystem failure, according to Günter Krebs's space page. By August 2018, NASA reported, "Despite the efforts of personnel at NASA in the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, engineers have been unable to lock onto the spacecraft to receive telemetry nor command the spacecraft." More recently, Ionospheric Connection Explorer, ICON, a satellite designed to study the atmosphere, launched October 2019, fell silent on November 25, 2022. NASA officials noted, "The team is currently unable to determine the health of the spacecraft, and the lack of a downlink signal could be indicative of a system failure." NASA reported that its Mars Climate Orbiter, launched December 11, 1998, designed to study Mars in orbit and serve as a communications relay for the Mars Polar Lander and Deep Space probes, was last heard from on September 23, 1999. An investigation found that the spacecraft burned up in the Mars atmosphere. Contact with NASA's Voyager 2 space probe, launched in 1977, had been lost in July 2023 when a wrong command made to the spacecraft changed its position and severed contact. At 2 billion miles from Earth, mission controllers were able to correct the error and contact was reestablished. National Hurricane Center updates. In a statement issued May 14, 2024, the National Hurricane Center will make a number of changes to its products and services for the 2024 hurricane season. Beginning on or around August 15, 2024, NHC will begin issuing an experimental version of the cone graphic that includes a depiction of inland tropical storm and hurricane watches and warnings in effect for the continental United States. The experimental cone graphic will be available on hurricanes.gov for both full and intermediate advisories. The current operational cone graphic will continue to be available, and there will be no changes with respect to how watches and warnings are displayed on that graphic, i.e., only coastal watches and warnings will be depicted. Recommendations from social science research suggest that the addition of inland watches and warnings to the cone graphic will help communicate wind risk during tropical cyclone events while not overcomplicating the current version of the graphic with too many data layers. The experimental graphic may not be available as soon as the current cone graphic due to the time needed to compile complete inland watch and warning information, but it should generally be available within 30 minutes of the advisory release. During the experimental phase, technical issues could affect the timeliness or availability of the graphic. In addition, on May 23rd, the National Hurricane Center issued its first summary of hurricane season probability and numbers of named storms predicted from NOAA's 2024 Atlantic Hurricane Season Outlook. NHC predicts there will be above normal Atlantic storm activity, with 17 to 25 named storms, of which 8 to 13 will become hurricanes and 4 to 7 will become major hurricanes. These numbers will be revised throughout the storm season. Field Day, June 22nd and 23rd. ARRL-sponsored Field Day is always held on the fourth full weekend in June. This year, Field Day is June 22nd and 23rd. Official rules can be found at ARRL.org. Join your local club, or get together with friends, or just go it alone. Whatever you do enhances your training in emergency preparedness as an operator. Invite non-ham friends and neighbors to see your field day operations and demonstrate what the emergency communication side of amateur radio is all about. And now the shortwave listener by Fred Waterer, programming_matters@yahoo.ca. Maranatha. I'm sure many readers have mixed or not-so-mixed feelings about the Overcomer Ministry and Brother Starer. To some, he is Brother Scarer. To others, he is BS. And no doubt to some, he is the last day's prophet of God. Thanks to his recordings, the late Brother R.G. Starer will be preaching into the ether as long as they keep playing them. He's not the first one to achieve this kind of auditory immortality. Lester Sumrall of Lycia Broadcasting, Lester Sumrall Evangelistic Association, Doc Gene Scott and his university network, J. Vernon McGee of Through the Bible Radio, and Peter J. Peters have all been heard and in some cases continue to be heard long after they have shuffled off their mortal coils. As shortwave listeners, we really do owe Brother Starer a vote of thanks. Without his investment in programming time on WRMI, WBCQ, and others, would they be able to continue to offer the eclectic mix of programming that they carry at other times? Thank the Overcomer Ministry, World's Last Chance, and others for investing so heavily. Don't like listening to that programming? That's what the tuning knob is for. Once in a while, though, it's interesting to hear what they are talking about. Sometimes amusing, rarely boring. Some of Brother Starer's tapes go back to the George H.W. Bush era. Pastor Melissa Scott has removed some of the sillier aspects of her late husband's broadcasts. I'm still not sure if that's a good thing or a bad one. He was really something. I'm always curious about such things. As I type this, I have just attended, virtually, the Winter SWL Fest. It's a fun event, whether you are attending in person or online. A tip of the hat goes to the organizers and everyone who presented. There was a lot of great information shared and a chance to chat and schmooze with many hobbyist friends old and new. Later this summer, July 21st to 23rd to be specific, the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters, NASB, will be meeting, as they did in 2010, just down the road from me in Hamilton, Ontario. The schedule is still tentative, but on the morning of the 22nd, there will be an Ontario DX Association twin spin. I will be speaking on the subject of shortwave programming trends at 9 a.m. Another ODXA colleague, Steve Canny, will speak on 32-plus years of responding to listener reports for CFRX in Toronto. I attended the 2010 conference as an observer, and it was quite interesting indeed. Details can be found at the NASB site, shortwave.org. A couple of popular broadcasters are returning to shortwave after a brief hiatus. Warm up those remote SDRs in North America. Texas Radio Shortwave returns to Channel 292 monthly. TRSW returns to Channel 292, Rohrbach, Germany, on each month's first consecutive Saturday and Sunday. In September, that's the 7th and the 8th, programs air the first Saturday on 3,955 kHz at 1900 UTC, and the first Sunday on 9,670 kHz at 1200 UTC. Tentative programs for the next few months: June, Lead Belly and Lemon Jefferson, Black Blues Musicians. July, Texas Music A to Z, Number 1, Cities. August, Texas Music A to Z, Number 2, Artists. Here is TRSW's statement. We're airing programs that were initially scheduled for 2023. These programs were aired only on WRMI. However, we ceased using Channel 292 in December 2022, so many European listeners now find it easier to tune in. We're issuing the QSLs that would have been sent out late in 2023 and this year, even though we weren't on the air then. For listeners, they're new designs. As always, we ask for detailed reception reports and welcome listeners using remote SDRs. You may recall the old TRSW policy of accepting reception reports only from listeners using their receivers. No more. TRSW continues to verify correct, detailed reception reports with a newly designed electronic QSL every month. Reports from listeners, especially from outside Europe, using remote SDRs are welcome. Reports should be sent to Texas Radio Shortwave at protonmail.com. 73 TRSW. Texas Radio Shortwave returning to our roots on Channel 292. News from Uncle Bill Telford. From the Isle of Music airs on the second Saturday of each month. This will be on June 8th. June's FTIOM will feature the winners of the Alternative Fusion and Nueva Trova categories of Cuba Disco 2024. It promises to be a great show. Broadcast times, June 8th, 0900 to 1000 UTC, 9670 kHz, and 1900 to 2000 UTC, 3955 and 6,070 kHz. Uncle Bill's Melting Pot is heard on the third Saturday of the month. In June, this will be on the 15th. The June edition of UBMP will feature music from the island of Hispaniola, which is home to the Dominican Republic and the troubled nation of Haiti, which is much in the news. Broadcast times, June 15th, 0900 to 1000 UTC, 9,670 kHz, and 1900 to 2000 UTC, 3,955 and 6,070 kHz. Both programs will feature additional music to round out the hour. It's great to be back on Channel 292. Two new times to hear Voice of the Report of the Week International on WRMI. 10 p.m. Eastern Time Wednesday, 0200 UTC Thursday, on 9,395 kHz. And 2300 UTC Wednesday on 7,570 kHz. New edition of I Love Italy on the air in English. Producer Andy Mangiarotti says, in this episode, you'll hear something that, in my opinion, is a bit bizarre. Often the Finnish singer Katja sends me her singles to share on my programs and on my small web radio. This time I thought, unfortunately, going a bit off topic from the usual theme of my program, to propose her music on WRMI, trying to help her get her music known worldwide. I thought it might be interesting in this new episode for the program to be conducted in English. Unfortunately, I don't speak English, but using artificial intelligence paired with my voice, I've created 15 minutes not in Italian but in English, where I present the artist Katja Tanskanen. Additionally, I'll talk about Milan in the 80s, when we also had our fast food chain, Burgi, bought by McDonald's in the mid-90s. Burgi, like Piazza San Babila in Milan, was a magical place of cultural and musical ferment. I Love Italy is heard at 2045 UTC Saturdays on 7,730 and 15,770 kHz. 0115 UTC Wednesdays on 5,850 kHz. 2100 UTC Saturdays on 15,770 kHz. And 2030 UTC Thursdays on 15,770 kHz. D-Day, June 6, 1944. June 6 will mark the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings in France in 1944. There is bound to be programming related to this significant anniversary from the BBC World Service, CBC, and elsewhere. As each year passes, fewer and fewer veterans survive to make the trip back to Normandy, making these anniversaries even more poignant. When it comes to D-Day, there is an intriguing resource many don't seem to know about. Have you ever wished you could go back and experience important events in real time as they happened? In the case of D-Day, you can. On June 6, 1944, someone had the bright idea to record the entire CBS broadcast day. It offers an opportunity to experience the Normandy invasion in real time as breaking news. It's fascinating on many levels. Having the benefit of hindsight, we all know how it turned out. They didn't. For a history geek such as myself, it's a treasure trove. A rather ordinary day begins with a remarkable report from German sources that the invasion has begun. As the day progresses, you hear speeches by Eisenhower, Montgomery, and de Gaulle. You hear from political leaders of the governments in exile, Norway, Belgium, Holland, and war leaders such as King George VI and FDR. For those interested in media history, many broadcast giants are heard in these recordings. Bob Trout holds down what we would now call the anchor desk in New York. His 3 a.m. tour of the newsroom is worth the price of admission. Also heard from New York is John Charles Daly, who some will recall as the host of What's My Line in the 1960s. Daly also broke the news of the Pearl Harbor attack in 1941. Edward R. Murrow, William L. Shire, Charles Collingwood, many others are heard. In those pre-satellite years, how is this done? By shortwave. You hear the shortwave static often. Sometimes they just could not connect with London because of the poor quality of the signal. For shortwave listeners, there is also a sample of the kind of programming America was broadcasting to the world via shortwave during the war. A few BBC World Service newscasts are heard as well. Depending on which online source you listen to, some include other programming heard between news reports, in other words, regularly scheduled programming. Soap operas, music shows, Burns and Allen, military band concerts as filler. The scope of this column does not allow me to go into too much detail, except to say these recordings are simply fascinating, especially with the benefit of hindsight. How do you listen? There are a number of YouTube channels that carry partial or substantial parts of the broadcast day. These often add newsreel footage. Look for a channel called 7 Days Productions. But my advice is to go to archive.org in the audio section. Click Audio at the top, then Old Time Radio on the drop-down menu. Then you can search D-Day and download the CBS entire broadcast day to be able to hear samples of typical programming along with breaking news 1944 style. BBC Antarctic Midwinter Broadcast. June 21st is the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. In the Southern Hemisphere, it is the shortest. For many years, the BBC World Service has been home to the annual Antarctic Midwinter Broadcast. As niche programming goes, this is the nichiest. It is the BBC's most unusual broadcast, serving its tiniest audience, the 3 to 4 dozen scientists and support staff at Britain's Antarctic bases. The past 9 editions of the broadcast are archived online at the BBC website. Festivities at the bases on Midwinter's Day are as traditional as those of Christmas. The base commanders rise early to cook breakfast for their staff. Presents are exchanged. There are sports, and even, weather permitting, a mad streak in the snow. Feasting continues before they gather around a shortwave set to listen to the traditional broadcast packed with greetings from their family and friends back home, together with music requests and messages from the British Antarctic Survey and a few celebrities. Finally, the Antarctic horror movie The Thing is screened. For those who know the plot, perhaps it is just as well there are no longer sledge dogs in Antarctica. While the broadcast has the tiniest intended audience worldwide, interest in the broadcast may just make it one of the widest heard broadcasts of the year. It has been hosted over the years by Martin Redfern and Sarah Matthews. As of this writing, no official plans or frequencies have been announced for 2024. It would be wise to check the usual sources of breaking news, such as Thomas Witherspoon's SWLing post, closer to the date. I've heard the last few, and I have to say it is a very poignant program with lots of messages from family back home. BBC Highlights. All times UTC, all programs are archived for future listening. The Blues Show with Sarah Matthews. Sarah Matthews' weekly roundup of the blues you need to hear from all around the world and in all shapes and sizes. Sarah won Best Blues Broadcaster Award at the annual UK Blues Awards at the end of April. BBC Radio 2, Monday, May 20th, 2100 to 2200. Sarah has also hosted the BBC World Service Antarctic Midwinter Broadcast the last few years. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.